Okay, let's begin. What you have in front of you are, I need a set, are three sets of various source pages that are going to assist us this evening. A word for those who have come to us tonight for your first class. I'm not letting him get away with it that easily. Not to worry. We have been working off a text. We have been studying the text in depth. Tonight's class is a review. And therefore, I will be making a great deal of a great number of assumptions vis-a-vis the text that we have studied. Not everything may be understood if you haven't been through the whole course, because it's all going to be based on the text that we have analyzed. So I'd ask your indulgence, if you are here for the first time and haven't been through the whole course, to bear with us that there may be parts that you don't understand. I would prefer not to get bogged down in the explanation of those things that are based on the fact that there's text assumptions that we haven't, that we've been going through, for the benefit of everybody. So you'll bear with us a little bit, and I ask your indulgence in that regard. That's number one. Number two, you should have in front of you three various source booklets. One is entitled Qohelet in Four Voices, and it has my name on it. I am not the author of Qohelet. I don't know why I put my name on it. And it says underneath it, based on Shirim by Harav Yaakov Maidan, and as I mentioned at the very beginning of this course, that most of the material here, of course, is reviewed and studied by I learned from my teacher, Rav Yaakov Maidan. This is a source page we will be using tonight, so hold it on the side. We will refer to it various times. The other two pages are crib sheets, cheat sheets, however you want to call them. People will say I should have given them to you at the beginning of the course. I intentionally did not. Method to the madness. The one in English is just what it says, summary sheets. I think at one point I gave you some of them during the year. This is the complete set. It's a one-page summary of each section in English. Basically identifies the key verses and the key themes that we have studied and learned. It basically goes in sequence of the text, each speech by each personality, who it's referring to, back and forth, essentially a summary in English, in short form, of the entire year. So theoretically, you could take this, go home, read it through, and you'll get a good deal of what we're going to address tonight. Right, so in the interest of not being too repetitive, my intention here tonight is not to do what's on these sheets, which is to go through the text from beginning to end in sequence and review the material. That's not my intent. What my intent this evening to do is to take a step back, having learned through all of this, and to try to look at the various themes and how they interconnect to each other in hindsight. Once we have now established all the different personalities, all the different speeches, and all of the different times in which they integrate with each other, our assignment tonight is to take a step back and look at who the Amal is, who the Nehenah is, who the Chacham is, who the Arei Elokim is from start to finish, and how do all of the different voices integrate in the Sefer as a whole. That's our agenda for this evening. One last set of pages I have given you, and that is one that I have always had the Yetzer Hara to use. I've only ever had the chutzpah to do it once. And that is, every year we read Qohelet on Sukkos. And when you read Qohelet, both based on the Nusach, and sometimes even based on who reads, you divide Qohelet up into Prakim. And as we've learned many over the course of this year in many different contexts, the chapters are not particularly helpful in an understanding of the text. So I've always had the Yetzer Hara to read Qohelet in shul publicly, but divide Qohelet not by prakim, but by speeches. Only ever had the chutzpah to do it once, and that was in Calgary. I haven't done it since, but what I have done instead is given you these pages. What are these pages? This is a full text of Qohelet start to finish in sequence. There's no cut and paste here. There's no rearranging of psukim. This is simply the text from Tanakh of Qohelet from the beginning to the end. All I have done is divided it up. So the first page, it's structured. Ticha, the opening. The second opening, the combined solution, as I called it. The page two, Hanehaneh, first speech of the Nehaneh. Page three, first speech of the Amal. Page four, first speech of the Yirei Elokim. Page five, second speech of the Amal. Page six, first speech of the Chacham. Page seven, the Chacham and the Yirei back and forth. Page eight, the second speech of the Nehaneh. Page 9, the second speech of the Chacham, and page 10, the final speech of the Array and the Sikkur. It is my contention that if you read Qohelet from here, the text should be much more understandable against the backdrop of what we have studied, and essentially becomes an aid to the review and to the understanding of the text. I could have given this to you at the beginning of the year, but that would have taken all the fun out of our assignment, which was to try to manually do what this piece of what these pages have done for you. Okay? I know that the English translations are not here. That I leave to your imagination. Okay. Are there any questions on the sheets that I've given you? So what I'm going to ask you to do for tonight, you can do one of two things. You can either pull out a text of Qohelet from a Tanakh, or you can work off these pages, because we are going to refer to the various personalities by their speeches. And so if you want to work off that, that might be helpful. That is actually what I am going to do. My apologies, this just started about half an hour ago, and it's not good. The summary sheets, you can really put aside. I'm not going to actually refer to them much tonight. I just wanted you to have them. I'm going to divide this review into two broad parts. Firstly, we're going to address the structure of the Sefer and the various themes that are covered throughout. And then, briefly, because most of that's fairly self-evident at this point, but then we will delve into, a little more deeply, delve into each of the different personalities and what they represent and what they address. Broadly speaking, Qohelet is a philosophical attempt to address an answer to a question. What is that question? In Qohelet terminology, what is that question? What is the basic question of Qohelet? Articulated.
What's the meaning of life?
Meaning of life. That's a broad sweep. Let's narrow it down a little bit. If you in Perek Bet Pasuk Gimel. He defines it as Tarti b'libi l'mshoch b'yayin et b'sari v'libi noheg b'chochma v'lechoz b'sichlut. I engaged the world, engaged folly, engaged wisdom, engaged my flesh, engaged all of the senses and application and intellectual prowess the Qohelet can bring to bear on the question, Eize tov l'avnei ha'adam asher yasu tachat ha'shamayim mispar yimei chayehem. What is good that man should pursue all the days of his life? Fundamentally, Qohelet, my apologies for placing this on the side, but for practical reasons it was a little easier. Fundamentally, Qohelet deals with the question of what is the definition of good? What is the definition of the contrary? Eize tov, what is good? What should man pursue in life? What is ultimately the... One could define it as the purpose or the meaning of life, but he specifically defines it in the context of the meaning of good versus evil, and to every reference to Tov, we have an equal reference to Ra throughout the book. So certainly one of the major themes of Kohelet is the theme of Tov and Ra and what that means. At the same time, there is another theme that runs through the Sefer, connected directly and tangentially to the first one, namely judgment. Actually is a, I would call it the moral consequence of Tov and Ra. Assuming I have Tov and Ra in the world, then I have to have some way of adjudicating between them. And therefore, there will be a discussion of Mishpat, or judgment, as a consequence of Tov and Ra. There's another fundamental theme that connects through the Sefer, death. Life in the shadow of death, or the meaning of life in the shadow of death, which is in a sense another way of asking the question, what is the meaning of good, or what value does good have in the context of death? They're similar questions, they deal with similar phenomenon, but they're different. And for our purposes, it's very significant that they are different, because the two themes of Kohelet, namely good and evil, life and death, we will see, will link us to a dual context or a dual theme that will run through the structure of this, of Kohelet. These two themes specifically, Tov Ra and life and death, are reminiscent of another part of Tanakh, specifically the story of Gan Eden, and the relationship between the Eitz, Hada'at, Tov Ra, and the Eitz, Hachayim. Two themes of Kohelet seem to link us back to Gan Eden and to the story of the two trees and the conflict or contrast between them. The notion that Adam was given essentially one over the other. You can't have both. If you want Chaim, if you want the tree of life or eternal life, then you have to be willing to concede the tree of knowledge to an authority beyond the human being, to God. If you embrace the tree of knowledge and embrace the authority over good and evil, then you have to concede the tree of life. That's essentially Rav Hirsch's explanation of the story of Gan Eden in a nutshell, and it fits very well into the context of Kohelet. How we got to Gan Eden, how we got to Gan Eden in the context of Kohelet and Shlomo HaMelech was via, how did we get to Gan Eden from Kohelet? Was via the Beit HaMikdash, correct. Was via the fact that Shlomo HaMelech's great achievement in the world is the construction of the Beit HaMikdash. And if you recall, we had a discussion at length of the relationship between the Beit HaMikdash and Gan Eden itself. The Beit HaMikdash served as a replacement to Gan Eden, almost as a functional replacement of Gan Eden. Gan Eden being the source of prophecy, Beit HaMikdash being the source of prophecy, Gan Eden being the place of the Shekhinah, the Beit HaMikdash being the place of the Shekhinah. And then we had all kinds of textual parallels between them as well, and brought us all the way back to that moment when Shlomo HaMelech is about to build the Beit HaMikdash, and he goes back to the dream, and he goes to a place called Giv'on. He's about to offer 1,000 sacrifices to inaugurate the building of the Beit HaMikdash. He has a dream in which God comes to him and says, Sha'al ma eten lach, ask of me what you will, and I will grant it, anything you wish. And at that moment, Shlomo HaMelech asked for three things, namely, asked for one thing actually, God gave him three. He asked for wisdom. Right, wisdom, finish the phrase, lahavin ben tov l'ra. He asked for the ability to discern the distinction between good and evil, which we translated or interpreted as an embrace of the tree of knowledge, and thereby repeating the same mistake that Adam HaRishon made when he took the tree of knowledge in lieu of the tree of life. The response of God was to say to him, fine, you want lev chacham lehavin ben tov l'ra, so be it. It comes with chachma, osher, and kavod. It comes with three themes. You get them all. The Eitz HaDaat is a total embrace of the world and all of its endeavors. Kavod, power, authority, the ability to build and to create and to impact the world. Chochmah, the ability to understand the world. Osher, the ability to enjoy the world. Translated into the terminology of Kohelet, chokhmah meaning wisdom, osher referring to physical pleasures out of the world, the ability to enjoy the world, and kavod referring to the ability to build and create and to impact and to have honor and power in the world. All of that essentially summarized in the Eitz HaDaat. Shlomo embraces it, Shlomo gets it, and then God says to him, if you will walk on my statutes and observe the commandments, then varachti et yamecha, I will lengthen your days. Meaning that the Eitz HaDaat is conditional. The Eitz HaDaat is essentially embrace of this world. But it comes at a price tag. The price tag is you lose the Eitz HaChaim. And you will struggle with the meaning of Osher and the meaning of Kavod and the meaning of Chachma in the shadow of the existence of death. And suddenly all the worldly possessions that we have become far less meaningful because we have cast over them the shadow of the Eitz HaChaim. That's essentially what Shlomo HaMelech asks for. What he loses is the Eitz HaChaim. It will take Shlomo all of Kohelet, his entire life, to reach the conclusion that Sof Davara Kol Nishma, after all the arguments are made and all of the experiences of life have been embraced, the truth is, that in truth, the Eitz HaChaim is far more valuable than the Eitz HaDaat. And that he made the same mistake that Adam HaRishon made in Gan Eden. And if you would embrace the Eitz HaChaim, then you would engage God and engage the Beit HaMikdash and engage spirituality, then you achieve eternity because you link to eternity rather than the ephemeral temporary benefits of Chachma, Osher, and Kavod, or in the terminology of Kohelet, Chochmah, the Chacham, the Amal, and the Nehenah. That is essentially our introduction. Kohelet, therefore, is the story of Shlomo HaMelech's search for the meaning of each of these endeavors. Chachma, Osher, and Kavod, or in terminology of Kohelet, Chochma, Melut, and Hana'ah. Each of these endeavors, what do they mean? What is the significance? How do I struggle with death? How do I come to terms with the meaning of life when I'm constantly fighting an imperfect world filled with temporary blockages and death at every corner? His initial attempt is a combined solution. He looks at all three of these in Perek Bet, looks at all three of these as one address, one personality, one endeavor of life. We just read the verse earlier. Essentially runs into the brick wall of death. Who am I going? What am I toiling for? What am I becoming wise for if I'm going to end up in the grave? What am I toiling for if I'm going to have to give it to somebody else because I'm not going to be here to enjoy it? What does benefit get me at the end of the day? What do I enjoy it for if it's all temporary? And all three of these combined come to essentially a stop, a failure. And at the end of Perek Bet, Shlomo HaMelech then turns his focus to analyzing each one by themselves. If perhaps the total combined personality is unable to struggle with a solution to the question of death, maybe each one by themselves can come up with some kind of resolution to what life is all about, tov and ra, good and evil, life and death. By themselves, each one an expert in a particular dimension of life. If that is the case, eventually that opens the door to a fourth personality. We have Chochmah, Melut, and Nehenah, the Chacham, Amal, and the Nehenah. The moment I take a look at each one of these individually, then I open the door for the possibility of a fourth personality, the one that enters into the dialogue last, namely the Yirei Elokim. And mixed with the other three, we have the beginning of a solution to the challenge before us. Okay. Each one of these personalities, therefore, by themselves, will address the world through the voice of Kohelet in a different place, in a different speech, struggling with the challenges of the themes we've addressed, and struggling with each other and the challenges that they pose to each other. Much as, if you remember a discussion of the parallel, much as Kohelet parallels the structure of Iov, where Iov is discussing a dialogue with three of his friends, we have essentially the same structure in Kohelet, the Yirei Elokim, dialoguing, debating, arguing with three personalities. I'm not sure I would call them friends, the Chacham, the Nehenah, and the Amal. On the in the middle of the source page that I've given you, you have a chart. And the chart is really for purposes of your own edification. I will assume we're going to jump around a little bit, but that's essentially in sequence when the Amal speaks, when the Nehenah speaks, when the Chacham speaks, and when the Yirei Elokim speaks. Verse, chapter, verse from 2, according to the way we divided it. There is room to debate, and I'm not going to begin the discussion here. There's room to argue exactly how to divide these voices. We included in our discussion, when we looked at how to divide up each chapter, we included not only the articulation of the position of that personality, but also we included the attack against the previous position or against another position in the speech of each of these personalities. One could argue that there could be a different way to divide up the speeches. None of that is really going to change the meaning of the text as a whole, give or take how we divide up each speech. This was the simplest way for me to work with it, and I share it with you. Structurally, the other observations that we made was that each one of these personalities, for the most part, is identifiable because they speak in a different form of speech. For the most part, it's not completely consistent, but the Amal tends to speak in first person. And the reason why the Amal tends to speak in first person is because the Amal is primarily focused on what he can achieve in the world and what he can build, at the parallel to Kavod in the dream of Shlomo HaMelech. The Nehenah tends to speak in third person, objectification, if you will, of the world. We are guests in God's world as the Nehenah begins. Therefore, everything is objective. Everything is third person. Everything is God created the world and he's in control and I'm just kind of sitting back and watching the movie. That's the starting position of the Nehenah. We'll talk about that and revise that. But that's certainly the beginning. And the Chacham, the Chacham is probably the least consistent, but the Chacham, and for that matter, certainly the Yirei Elokim, the Chacham tends to speak in second person a little bit, but certainly the Yirei Elokim speaks in second person consistently. He is constantly giving Musa, telling you what to do and how to do it. That's the calling card of the Yirei Elokim. He comes with an authority of the Torah, and he says, this is what you have to do. Not a personal experience like the Chacham, and not an objective experience like the Nehenah, but a revealed Masoret. And therefore he says, this is what you must obey. Furthermore, one of the things that I mentioned when we looked at the Sefer, although I don't know how much in detail we addressed its significance, is the fact that Qohelet is divided into two parts. Qohelet very neatly divides in half. Not just because the chapters divide 6 and 6, but because the Masoret divides the two prakim, the two halves of the Sefer, into two components. There is one paragraph break in the entire Sefer. That is at the end of chapter 6, before the beginning of chapter 7. It's the only parshia, it's the only division of paragraphs in the Tanakh. It's only parsha, and it's a parsha stuma. In addition, I showed you there was a large letter, tet, at the beginning of the seventh parak. Both of those indicate structurally that there's a division between the two halves of the Sefer, Prakim Aleph through Vav and Prakim Zayin through Yud Bet. That division actually speaks much more to the content of each half of the book, because in fact the themes of the first half of the Sefer are different than the themes of the second half of the Sefer. And that's really a significant issue that we need to address. The first half of the Sefer, for the most part, well, not completely, but for the most part, addresses the theme of Tov and Ra much more explicitly than the second half of the Sefer. The second half of the Sefer struggles much more specifically with the question of death and the significance of death and what happens after death and is there life after death than the first half of the Sefer does. And so you could, in broad terms, argue that the first half of the Sefer is an Etz Hadaat-focused half, and the second half of the Sefer is an Etz Chaim-focused half, although that's a little bit too superficial. What is true is that there are, both in content and in personalities, the two halves are very different. If I were to look at each unit by himself, chapters 1 through 6, who's speaking? Structurally, forget the content for a second. Just structurally, if I look at the first I actually have this charted out for you in the sheets if you want to cheat, but that's okay. Bottom of the first page. Structurally, if I divide up the chapters, the sections, section 1, Prakim Aleph through Vav, section 2, Prakim Zayin through Yud Bet, Chativa is a unit in the Sefer, then there are a number of themes that divide up the two halves. Before you get to those two charts, however, who is speaking? Who are the different personalities in each half? Right, who do we have in the first half of the Sefer? Prakim Aleph through Vav. Now you've got the chart before you, so you should be able to figure it out. Right? Qohelet has four personalities. So Qohelet doesn't help me. Right, Qohelet speaks through four voices. Who are my four voices? Okay. Right, the story begins with the Nehenah, then it moves to the Amal, then it moves to the, not in the first half, right, Perek Dalid, actually it comes to the Perek Gimel, Perek Dalid, then the Yireh, Perek He, and then Perek Vav. Not yet. He can't push the Chacham. We'll get to him. He doesn't open his mouth till Perek Zion. Right? Who's the end of Perek Kay and beginning of Perek Vav? The Amal. Starting with Perek Zion, what's the structure? You have the sheets, too. You can go through the sheets. You can just look at it in sequence, right? Who starts? Perek Zion. And this was Perek Gimel, for the most part. Perek Dalet, Perek Hay, and Perek Vav. Perek Zayin, Chacham. Then? Yeah. right? After the Chacham comes the Yireh Elokim, correct? The debate with the Chacham goes to the Yireh, then right, the Chacham and the Yireh are going to go back and forth, but essentially you start with Perek Zayin is the Chacham, Perek Chet, Zayin Chet is the Yireh, Perek Tet is the Nehneh, Perek Yud is the Chacham again, Yud and Yud Aleph, and then Yud Aleph and Yud Bet, the Yireh. Structurally, that's how the Sefer divides up. What does that tell me? If I divide each half of the Sefer into, if I divide the Sefer into two units, and I look at each unit by itself, what's parallel and what's not? The Amal is not on the second half, and the Chacham is not on the first half. That's my first clue. Okay? My second clue. Take this speech out of the picture. Why? Why do I take Perek Yud Aleph and Yud Bet out of the picture? Because it was the conclusion. It was his conclusion. It was essentially the victory speech in this debate. I'm going to take it out of the picture. Now take a look at the two halves and give me the structure. In part one, how many times does the Amal speak? Twice. How many times do the Nehenen and the Array speak? Once each. In part two, the Chacham speaks twice, the Array and the Nehenen speak once. You almost get the sense that each half of the Sefer has an antagonist and two protagonists. You have one key personality and two contrasting personalities. In the first half of the Sefer, the key personality is the Amal. And against him are the Nehenen and the Yireh Elokim. In the second half of the Sefer, the key personality is Chacham. And the against him stand the Yireh and the Nehenet. So the Yireh and the Nehenet don't change. They are consistent. They speak once each in each of the two halves of the Sefer, except that the Yireh Elokim has an additional concluding speech. The Chacham speaks twice in part one, the Amal speaks twice in part two, and the Amal speaks twice in part one. What does that tell me? What can I now conclude that I could not conclude when we were going through the Sefer? For all intents and purposes, there are not four personalities in Sefer Kohelet. There are only ever three. Because the Chacham and the Amal never appear together. It's kind of like Clark Kent and Superman. Right? Now that's not accidental. That means that whereas the Yireh Elokim and the Nehenet are completely contrasting, separate, different, and distinct personalities, and there's nothing they share in common, that is not true for the Amal and the Chacham. The Amal and the Chacham share a great deal in common, and in fact, one could even argue that one is the transformation of the other. But when the Amal fails, he takes a step back and becomes the Chacham. Why is that significant? Take a look at it from the perspective of methodology. Both the Nehenet and the Array essentially share a common denominator methodologically. Namely, they both acknowledge that in some level responsibility for this world belongs to God. Both the Amal and the Chacham struggle with a world in which the fundamental axiom is that I'm in control. The Amal directly tries to create and build and to do, all the different things that he tried to create and to build and to establish, and the orchards and the vineyards, everything he tried to build and create. The Chacham, when the Amal fails to find a way to place his mark on the world, the Chacham, the Amal in a sense, takes a step back, transforms himself into a different methodology, namely, not an effort to try to build and create and to change the world, but to intellectualize and try to understand the world. But they both make the assumption that ultimately man is at the center of the universe. And neither really leaves a great deal of room for God. Whereas the Neheneh and the Yareh are the only two personalities that are prepared, and that's the irony of the Neheneh, is that they are the only two personalities that are really prepared to leave room for God for various reasons. Number one. Number two, neither the Arei Elokim nor the Neheneh have a particular need or desire to try to control or to rule this world. Whereas the concept of Shilton, the concept of authority and power and of ruling of this world, control of this world, certainly is shared between the Chacham, who talked about Ilach Eretz Shemalkech Na'ar, woe to you of a land whose king is a fool, rather than a wise man, and the Amal, who certainly talked about the Melech as the solution to all of the problems in the world, and if only he could be successful in that regard. So from a number of perspectives, both methodology, thematically, structurally, these two halves of the Sefer are very different. Now, if I understand that structurally, different personalities speaking in different times, the Amal versus the Chacham, the Arei and the Neheneh as the antagonists, if that's the structure of my Sefer overall, then does that tell me something about the substantive content of each half of the Sefer? And the assumption is that it would have to, because otherwise it would be an arbitrary division that would be meaningless. Why would I waste your time with it? Right? So what does it tell me about the difference in the in the content of each of these two halves of the Sefer? So essentially, if I look at it from the point of view, let's look at them one at a time. In the first half of the Sefer, Prakim Aleph through Vav, when I had the argument between the Neheneh and the Amal over things like Dimata Ashukim, the tear of the oppressed, over who was responsible for fixing this world and for establishing justice in this world, over the problem of Makom HaMishpat Shama HaRasha, Makom HaTzedek Shama HaRasha, the problem of injustice and unfairness in this world, and who is responsible for it. And then there's argument that ultimately God is responsible for the world. It's a tzaddik v'yata v'sha yishpot elokim. God will judge the righteous and the wicked. God will take care of it all in the next world. And the Neheneh's and the Amal's response that in such a world where man is not responsible, where man can't achieve justice in the world, I'd rather not be born. Dimata Shukim, Tov Mimeno Anefel. In that kind of an argument where the Yareh Elokim enters into the discussion and says, Gavoa Mel Gavoa Shomer, there's some kind of a partnership and a hierarchy, a high one above the high ones. It's a combination of both the Neheneh and the Amal. Both the Neheneh, and the Amal, the notion of an earthly king and a divine king. Essentially, that whole discussion revolves around two fundamental points, namely, who is responsible for I just combined them together, so let's do them separately. In If I look at them from the perspective of, on the one hand, tzedek u'mishpat, meaning the notion of justice and, or the challenge of justice, is there a expectation of justice in this world? Expectation between whom? Justice or injustice between whom? What kind of justice are we talking about when the Nehenes speaks of Makom HaMishpat Shama HaResha? Or when the Amal says, if that's the tier of the Dimata Ashukim Ve'en Lahem Menachem, with the tier of the oppressed, I would rather not be born if there's no solution to the problem. Injustice between whom? Between man and man. Right? The tzedek u'mishpat that we're talking about is the injustices that are perpetrated between man and man. Who is responsible ultimately for the establishment of justice in this world? The question of achrayut, of responsibility, is the theme over which they are arguing. To the Nehenneh, responsibility belongs to God. To the Amal, responsibility belongs to man. And to the Yirei Elokim, there is a partnership between them. But ultimately, the theme of this entire discussion is a theme of what is this level of responsibility over injustice perpetrated between man and man. Second half of the Sefer, which starts with the Chacham's declaration to all, learn to live with the injustices in this world, learn to live with the imperfections in this world. God created an imperfect world. Remember the philosophy of resignation. Learn to live with it. So he turns to the Nehenneh and he says, this world is not perfect. You can't enjoy yourself through life because ultimately there exists death. And you have to learn to live with the fact that not everything is happy. Tov lelechat abet evel, milechat abet mishteh, ba'asher husof kol adam. It's better to go to v'achayi ten el libo. It's better to go to a house of mourning than to a house of festivity and for celebration. It's a much more realistic picture of life. Turns to the ksil, he turns to the fool, and he says, I'm going to review all of this in depth as we go through personality by personality in the second half. But just overview, all of this theme of the Chacham, learn to live with the imperfections of the world, imperfections created by whom? Created by God. And ultimately leads him to a discussion of the Yirei Elokim, and he says to the Yirei Elokim, Al ti tzadikat be, al ti shahar be, don't be too righteous, don't be too wicked. Why? Because man's not perfect, because there ultimately leads him to a discussion of the concept of gemul, of retribution, of reward and punishment, of good things that happen to bad people and bad things that happen to good people. There's not a word of tzadik v'ralo in the entire first half of the Sefer. Tzadik v'ralo is the overarching theme of the second half of the Sefer, because the second half of the Sefer deals with the question of tzedek u'mishpat not from the perspective of the injustices perpetrated by man against man, but the injustices perpetrated by God against man. The greatest of those injustices being death. And so the entire second half of the Sefer, from the Chacham to the Arei's response, to the Nehenneh's response about Yesh Tzadikim Asher Magi Alehem Ki Maaseh Rashim V'Rasha'im Asher Magi Alehem Ki Maaseh Tzadikim, there are righteous who get the fate of the wicked and the wicked who get the fate of the righteous, and it's just a whole big mishmash of absolute nothingness and no order and no rhyme and no reason, and there's no life in the beyond this grave. That whole ideological perspective is a debate around Tzedek u'Mishpat, and ultimately Tzedek u'Mishpat not being Adam l'chavero, but being Adam l'makom. Who is perpetrating the so-called injustice? Man or God? If it's man, who is responsible for rectifying it? Man. If it's God, who is responsible for rectifying it? God. Which leads me to a very interesting observation. The Yirei Elokim smack in the middle of each section, offers a solution to this problem, to the question of mishpat, to the question of justice and judgment. The Amalekim offers a solution. But his solution in the first half of the Sefer is very different than his solution in the second half of the Sefer. In the first half of the Sefer, what was his solution? If you see injustice in the country, don't worry about it, because not quite, because there's a hierarchy, because there's a partnership, because there's a gavoa and there's a gavoa me'al gavoa, there's a king and there's a king of kings. And between the two of them, ugvohim alahem, between the two of them together, they will work things out. Man will do his part, and God will do his part. To do what? To bring man to justice. To bring man to justice. Where is the center, the epicenter, of that effort to bring man to justice? Where does the Yirei Elokim bring me? Physically, where is the epicenter of the effort to bring justice between man and man? Gavoa me'al gavoa. Where does that bring me? Physically, to the Beit HaMikdash. That's the place of mishpat, both earthly mishpat and heavenly mishpat. That's the place where it will all sort itself out in the partnership between man and God. In the second half of the Sefer, when the Yirei Elokim responds to the question of God's injustice, where does he take me? To Olam Haba. To the concept of a world in which God will level the playing field. Give everybody the just deserts. Make sure that nobody escapes his fate and destiny in this world. Olam Haba is also known in Chazal as, another term for Olam Haba in Chazal, Olam Emes, Gan Eden. And so we're back to the Beis HaMikdash Gan Eden partnership. The difference is that in the first half of the Sefer, the Yirei Elokim took me to the Beit HaMikdash. In the second half of the Sefer, he took me to Gan Eden. In the first half of the Sefer, he was dealing with man's injustice, so he gave me a solution that was earthly. The second half of the Sefer, the theme was God's injustice, and therefore my solution had to be non-earthly or otherworldly. So the notion that these two halves of the Sefer actually divide into different themes is fundamentally important because it helps me understand where the Yirei Elokim is taking me. The notion that the Yirei Elokim speaks about so insistently, the notion of mishpat, means something very different in the first half of the Sefer than it means in the second half of the Sefer. When he talks about mishpat in the first half of the Sefer, we're talking about bringing man to justice in a court system or through divine interaction in the world. When we talk about bringing man to justice in the second half of the Sefer, we're talking about some kind of notion of justice of the soul being judged after it leaves this world, whatever that means. The two very different concepts. They interact, they sit one on top of the other. I described it once, the first line of defense and the second line of defense. But the two halves of the Sefer focus on different themes, and therefore the solution of the Yirei Elokim is different because the question is different. Everybody with me? Okay. Lastly, before we begin a walkthrough of each of our personalities and what they represent, the last issue, which sort of structural issue related to the Sefer, is the theme with which Kohelet opens the Sefer and closes the Sefer. Namely, almost a literary device that he uses, a metaphor that he uses to connect all the different pieces of the Sefer together, and that is the parable with which the Sefer opens, the metaphor of the four states of nature, the four cycles, the four examples of the four cycles in nature that Kohelet uses to A, identify the problem, right, that the world seems to go round and round in circles without getting anywhere, what's its purpose? B, introduce the personalities of the Sefer, each one of these four cycles representing a different personality of Kohelet. And C, he uses that metaphor, I don't know if I'll have time to go into it, but I actually counted four different places in the text where that metaphor reoccurs, which is interesting, structurally. I'm sure that there's a lot to do with that, just interesting to know. But more importantly, he brings that metaphor to the to close at the end of the Sefer when the Yirei Elokim has his final say. And it's that metaphor which forms the foundation of the Yirei Elokim's argument, that not everything do we see, not everything do we understand, and that's precisely the limitation of the Yirei, the Chacham, and the Nehenet. That if you look at the world from the perspective of limited experience, the Nehenet, the Amal, the Array, the Nehenet, each one of them, separately and combined, are of limited experience and limited vision. And when you look at the world from limited vision, you only see one part of the world. You see the cycle as it starts and as it finishes. But you don't see the whole cycle. And only the Yirei Elokim can truly understand that there is a component of the cycle that we can't perceive. When the sun sets and rises again, for years and years and years, man thought that all that happens is that the sun sets and somehow goes back to, it goes behind the world, and then starts again, and that the cycle of the sun is a half an arch. But somehow the sun has to get back from the other and the end of the arch to the beginning of the arch, so it kind of scurries up along behind the world and then comes up again, behind the sphere. That was the scientific model of how they understood sunrise to sunset, until somebody figured out that the world was round and that the sun just keeps going around in an endless cycle. From man's perspective, we see half the cycle. We see the arch. Very appropriate for St. Louis, but we're just looking at the arch. From the perspective of the Yirei Elokim, who's prepared to accept the fact that there's another half to the cycle that you can't see. So the metaphor with which the Sefer begins is fundamental not only to the introduction of the personalities, the introduction of the themes and the problem, but it's part of the methodology that the Yirei Elokim uses for the solution. To recognize the fact that each one of these personalities only sees part of the cycle, it's the Emunah that sees the other half of the cycle. So, let's pick up from there. And you have a chart at the top of the second page of the source pages, in which I've given you the four cycles, Dor Halech V'Dor Ba V'Yaretz Ilam Amadet, the cycle of the earth, the cycle of Zerach HaShemesh Uva HaShemesh, the cycle of the sun rising and setting, the cycle of the wind, Holech Al Darom V'Sovev El Tzafon, Sovev Sovev Olech HaRuach, the wind that goes around in circles, and the cycle of the water, Kol HaNechalim Olchim Al HaYam, all of the rivers go into the sea, and the sea never gets filled, and simply goes back to the rivers, the cycle of water. Dust, fire, wind, and water. Essentially the four states of nature, as they understood it, each one of them representing a different one of our four personalities in the Sefer, the Amal, the physical toiler, represented by the Afar, the dust, the Chacham, the wisdom, the light of understanding, represented by the sun, the Nehenet, the soul that's constantly searching for physical benefit and enjoyment and can never be satiated like the water, and the Yirei Elokim, who comes in much later in the picture, who is represented by the Ruach, the wind, or the spirit. Each one of these has its representation throughout the Sefer. I've given you the psukim, and we've talked about that at length before. Are there any questions so far in what we have discussed? So just to recap, what I've essentially tried to do is give you the structure of the Sefer from a bird's eye view. The notion that the Sefer divides up into not only four personalities debating amongst themselves, but in fact two halves dealing with two different themes. The tree of knowledge, good and evil, earthly injustice, olam ben adam l'chaveiro, the tree of life, retribution, schar va'onish, God's injustice or justice in how he runs the world, and ultimately the notion of how does God account for the injustices or the evil in the world. Or how do we account for God's seemingly injustice? The personalities of Kohelet, the Neneh, the Amal, the Arei, and the Chacham, each one debating in different terms, the Amal being focused on this world is the primary personality of the first half of the Sefer, the Chacham being the intellectual focused on the issue of the academic, the intellectual question of the righteous who suffer is the primary personality in the second half of the Sefer, and the Yireh Elokim who guides us to the answers, but it guides us to two different answers. To the Beit HaMikdash for the judgment, for the partnership of responsibility in this world in part one, and to Gan Eden or Alam Haba for God's justice in part two. Questions? No. Okay. So that means, what time is Mincha?
8:10.
Okay, excellent. So we are 5 minutes before Mincha, and I finished the first half of our discussion. The second half of our review is to actually walk through each of our personalities in sequence. Rather than by doing it in sequence of the text, I wanted to do it by personality. So we're going to start with the Amal and summarize the both positions of the Amal. Remember, the Amal speaks twice. Once, twice. So we're going to look at the transition of the Amal from his opening position to his closing. The Neheneh speaks twice. We're going to look at the opening position of the Neheneh compared to Yitzchak Avinu, and the closing position of the Neheneh compared to Esav HaRasha, and how that takes place. The Chacham, who speaks twice, both in the context of the second half of the Sefer. What happened to the Chacham, and how did the Chacham transition from a philosophy of acceptance, of resignation, of calm, cool, and collected, everything's there, just accept it and live with it, to the ultimate kvetcher who can't accept anything in the world? What happened to the Chacham? And finally, the Yireh Elokim, and how he pulls all the three pieces together. That is our mission, should you choose to accept it, in the second half of today's review, which will be after Mincha. So we're going to take a break now. I know we're 5 minutes early. There's a question. We have to do a little bit of reset up. People are already coming in for Mincha. And we will finish Mincha at 8:45, give or take. So we will reconvene at 8:45 till 9:45 to 9:45 is the scheduled plan for the second half of this review.